welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the Pot of Thunder and Rock and Roll. And today, they attacked Roman Reigns Monday night on Raw. Are they aligned with AJ Styles or not? We got them here. First podcast interview since they came to the WWE, Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows on Talk is Jericho. They finally made their WWE debut fresh from New Japan Pro Wrestling, where they were part of the popular, crazy popular Bullet Club along with AJ Styles. There's a connection here. The plot thickens. AJ Styles could become the world champion thanks to Gallows and Anderson. We're going to talk about their time in Japan, the big WWE raid on New Japan, how it happened, what it was like to give notice to their bosses, Gato and Tiger Hattori. Carl had been with New Japan for 8 years. Gallows is all, and what a quirky nut he is. He's also going to talk about his first run in the WWE back when he was Festus. Remember that? And you'll never believe who came up with the gimmick and who originally showed Gallows how to do the Festus face. Your Festus! He also got a crazy story about wrestling in Nigeria and being stranded in the Congo, all right? Get ready for some wild stories from the brothers, Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows. A few months ago, I guess we can call it a raid on New Japan from WWE.
Yes.
With AJ Styles, Nakamura, and then, of course, Anderson, Carl Anderson, and Doc Gallows. Are we Luke now? Or
I think we're Luke now. I think so.
But it was a huge thing because everybody here in the States was awaiting your arrival. And finally, on Raw, you guys made your big debut in WWE, re-debut for you.
Yes.
Man, that was... Were you able to sleep last night, brother?
Well, it was, you know, we talked about it. It was surreal because I think for him, it was a foregone conclusion that he wasn't going to come here, and I didn't think I was ever coming back.
Did you mean Carl?
Yes.
Okay.
And so for us, it's just kind of been a whirlwind. You know, we had a lot of negotiations with different companies and stuff, and but we did not expect to end up here. So it was thrilling, as it would be for anybody. We walked out in the Staples Center, sold out, had a very nice reaction, which we did appreciate, and that's why we do this stuff. I think all of us, you know.
Well, you mentioned this is your second time.
Yes.
And this is your first ever, Carl.
Yeah.
Now, is this something that you always kind of dreamed about?
Yeah, of course. You know, when that's the only thing I ever wanted. And then as I started training and I started getting into the wrestling business, you know, at that point, I just wanted to make money. And I wanted to go, you know, anywhere I could to make as much money as I possibly could. And so I you know, spending 8 years in Japan, I kind of just accepted I was going to stay there and I was going to be in Japan for the rest of my career, which was fine. I'd accepted that. But I always wanted to be in the WWE, man. Everybody does. So, you know, being able to be to debut at the Staples Center last night, bro, unbelievable.
Now, you guys had a big name value in Japan. You're part of the Bullet Club, which was the hottest group. It still is.
Yeah.
You know, guys come and go from the group. But what was the catalyst for you guys to decide you wanted to come back here again?
I think it was time. We felt like, you know, we had kind of done as much as we could do in Japan at that point and had gotten as hot as we could get. And honestly, too, like, we're both dads and stuff. And you know, the schedule there was a little different because sometimes we'd be gone 7-8 weeks at a time without getting to come home. And then when we did, it would be a week to 10 days and stuff. So it became a strain that way, too. And I think we realized that our name value and kind of our market value was to the point where we had some options and there seemed to be some on the table. And then when this came up, like you said, I mean, who wouldn't want to come here?
Mm-hmm. So. Did they call you?
Yeah, they did. Like our contracts were done in Japan. And we were, and it was like he just said, it was the point where we were talking about wanting to leave Japan. Like, I love Japan, I love New Japan Pro Wrestling. They gave me my first shot, but being away for so long, for such a long amount of time, like it was starting to affect my family life and affect my brain. Like, those flights over there every single month was actually starting to take a toll on my psychic abilities or whatever it's called.
Mental capacity.
It actually started kind of as a joke because, you know, as you know, too, when you're on the road, we do things to entertain each other. And this is a very entertaining guy, which I think I'm happy that the world's going to find out now. But it started as a joke where we would make up these weird, crazy demands we were going to have to all these places, not here, and say all these funny things just basically to pop each other. And then we started negotiating with some places, and we went, wait a second, this really could happen. And then it became serious, and then, of course, eventually this opportunity came.
Like, what were some of the things that you were going to ask for?
Well, we were going to drive, for example, we were going to drive to Warner Brothers, walk right up to the executive and tell them how much money we wanted, and we weren't going to take any no for an answer. Right. And if they told us, no, we don't care, we're going back to Japan.
Yeah, we got Japan.
We're over in Japan. We can do whatever we want.
But that's something a lot of people might not understand, that working in Japan, like, it is... I mean, it's a great place to work, but when you're over there for 2 weeks or 3 weeks or 4 weeks, I mean, whatever the schedule is, it is a culture shock.
Absolutely.
And yes, you get used to it, but it's still not where we're from.
Right.
And as much as you understand it over there, it's still always a little strange.
Yeah. It's just like it was our second home, man. We were talking about it last night. Even just we miss the food, we miss the sponsors, we miss the drinking and the talking with the brothers after.
We used to call the Tokyo Dome Hotel our luxury apartment, because like when we would have a couple days off, it would be in Tokyo, and we were always there. And it was a nice Western style hotel with big rooms, so we weren't like, you know, we'd be on the road in these country towns, and like I would have to shower with one leg out, the shower curtain open, and wash one side of my body while just drenched in the bathroom, then turn around, wash the other side of my body, and then maybe piss in the trash can because there was 2 inches of water on the bathroom floor. So I mean, it wasn't always a luxurious experience.
You're not the cleanest brother either. Like,
you say that as I see the chicken in your beard from catering.
That's good. So that's another funny thing you mentioned, the Western style hotel.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the Western toilets.
Oh.
Okay. Oh. Like when you're in Japan and people might, once again, you have to find a Western toilet.
You have to find a Western toilet.
And if you don't, what do you get?
Well, a Japanese bathroom experience can go one of two ways, because you're either in the Maserati where you got a heated toilet seat, you got a bidet for a gentle wash, which I want to have put into my own home now because I'm so used to it, or there's a hole in the ground. And listen, if you're not a great squatter or if you're feeling a little sore, I know a fellow professional wrestler that ruined a pair of nice brand new Air Jordan tennis shoes because his aim was off and his squat wasn't deep.
Well, do you know,
big squats, brother.
Exactly. Have you ever heard of John Anderson, strongman John Anderson, big jacked up guy.
He's a professional bodybuilder.
He's a bodybuilder. He went to CML for a while. He came to New Japan. And he was not with the Japanese culture. We went to a show and he comes out and he goes, brother? And I said, yeah. I just met him. I didn't know him. He goes, who should I talk to about a little problem? I said, what happened? He goes, well, I crapped all over the floor. I said, oh, man, go tell Hattori. You know, Hattori's going to tell everybody. That's why. He goes, oh, okay. So he comes in. I hear Hattori go, what the? Oh, man, that's gross, man. Come on, man.
That's a great
clean it up, man.
Is that the guy?
He just was poop all over. He missed
shit on floor. But what I like about what you're saying, too, and you mentioned there's a hole in the floor. It's not like there's a hole like sawed in the wood. There's actually like a porcelain little thing on the ground.
Why not just stand it on up?
I know. Why not? But you're looking. It's almost like a urinal, but it's not even. It's like a horizontal urinal.
If you notice, sometimes though, like with Japanese people, like if me and Gallows are, if we're tired, we want to sit down. But sometimes Japanese people, they want to relax. They just squat.
Mm.
You know what I mean? They're on their phone. They're just looking at their phone. Squatted.
Yeah. That's a part of the culture.
And it's just kind
of
how they're used
like
to doing
it. We go to a sponsor dinner, and sometimes, you know, if we had a good match or something, we used to call it GMS, good match syndrome. Yeah, we wanted to go out and have a little fun.
Christopher Daniels told me that.
And then you'd walk into a restaurant with a sponsor, and you're pumped up. They're pumped up. We're going to eat great food. We're going to have some drinks. We're going to have a good time. And then there's no chairs. Mm-hmm. There's a floor.
Which was fine for me, but big brother here.
You know, I got long legs.
Especially when you got to get under the table.
Yeah,
you got to work your way in there
Indian style and then sit there for 5-6 hours, and it's not the most comfortable thing in the
world. Explain the concept of a sponsor.
Well, it's like I used to tell my wife, like, these sponsors are taking us out. And she, like, as she figured out what we were doing, she started, they're just fans that have money. And so I had to explain to them that it wasn't always the case, because, you know, they sponsor, like, for example, there's a big sponsor in Tokyo called Glio, and they sponsor New Japan. They actually help New Japan with money and funding and this and that. And so the president always wanted to take us out to eat. And so, you know, he's like a real sponsor. But, yes, there are fans that we just call sponsors. They just take you out to eat. They pay for all your food. They pay for all your drinks. When the WWE boys came a couple years ago, Bray Wyatt and Roman Reigns came out, and they asked for another beer. And I said, brothers, it is unlimited.
That was always our saying. Well, it's unlimited with one finger in the air. Same as in.
But Carl said it's unlimited. Hand it over.
But, I mean, and explaining it to a layman, yes, it is a fan with money, but it's a status symbol for those guys to hang out with wrestlers.
Yeah. They want to be seen.
So it's not like – okay, I guess it is a fan, but it's more than that. It's someone with that has some notoriety of their own.
Right.
Yeah. To be seen with you guys, it just makes them even cooler.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a status thing. Like, one of our guys who's a good friend but also a sponsor, like, his parents own a hospital in Tokyo. Mm. And, I mean, so, like, they're prominent in the community, but he loves it. You know what I mean? He's always on the front row in Cork and Hall for the TV tapings. He'll go on the road to watch us when he can. You know, he came to America for WrestleMania. He's a legitimate big fan, but he's also... He has some status in the community and stuff like that, and he was a great guy to go out with because he was hooked up everywhere. So,
it's also like the culture. Like, if we go out in America, all the brothers are splitting it up. You know, if four of us go out, but that's not true. If we're with AJ, splits that up. How many ways are we splitting this, man?
We're freaking four guys.
We got it, AJ. And AJ's the richest of us all. AJ's the richest of all, and me and Gallows are paying.
That's what I noticed with AJ when you're doing a match and we put together. He's like, come here, you. So then I'll come for you, and I'll pick up and say, come here, you, and I'll pull you in, and I'll go for the Styles Clash.
I get a freaking headlock.
I can't take it when Doc and Carl start going. Man, they drive me crazy, man.
He used to put his headphones in like 10 minutes into the bus ride because we're just doing voices and impersonations and telling the stupid potty humor jokes, and he just can't take it.
I'm stuck with
these
idiots.
These same freaking impersonations 100 freaking times.
6 freaking hours from Sendai to Tokyo, I had to hear Doc and Carl going back and forth. Doc is Luke, of course.
Well, that's the thing. Like, I was telling, I think I was telling Carl, like, Gallows, you're one of the most quirkiest, funniest guys. And, you know, like, just kind of a little bit on your own.
Yes.
In your own world.
I'm out to lunch a little bit.
Tell the famous story. I was WrestleMania, whatever. We were in Phoenix, and I had to do some appearance, and I had a car, and I was driving back, and I see in the distance these two big, giant guys walking down the center of the street. Not the median, center of the road, kind of weaving back and forth like pirates, like singing. And I pull up right behind them, and it's Gallows and Mike Knox. And I'm like, get out of the road. They're like, hey, what are you doing? Get out of the road. Do you want to ride? No.
You guys are not on the sidewalk. Oh, thanks.
But you found a kindred spirit here in Carl Anderson.
I would say
we definitely help. We help feed off each other, but he's definitely quirkier and weirder, though.
Oh, come on.
In certain ways, baby.
We all have our things.
Let me take a step back. First of all, you were released from WWE.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when that happens as a professional, I mean, you're probably thinking, uh-oh. Like, what do I do now?
You know, it was weird for me because everything kind of happened in reverse. I started wrestling right when I turned 18 years old. But, it was small independence in the Southeast, and I wasn't learning a whole lot. But I was going around and stuff like that, and I used to send tapes here every single week. And I would call Tommy Dreamer, and I would call Johnny Ace on their personal cell phones because people had leaked them to me because
they thought
it would be funny. You know what I mean? I'm sure.
Yeah.
I think they hired me, like, let's just shut them up, and then, you know, we can get
calling
rid of them.
Me anymore at 3 in the morning.
So, and I was the greenest guy in developmental. I went there at 21. You know, so, like, I got released here. I was 26, about to turn 27 when I got released, but I'd already been in the company for, like, you know, 5.5 years or something. Mm-hmm. So to me, I was like, I was a lifelong crazy professional wrestling fan. So I wanted to do what the guys in the magazines did. I wanted to go to Mexico. I wanted to go to Puerto Rico. I wanted to go to Japan. It all came in reverse. I got hired and was in developmental. My mother called me and she goes, there's a guy with an Australian accent who wants to book you in Puerto Rico, because I kept blowing up Bushwhacker Luke to try to go to the island. And I was like, well, I'll tell him I already got a job, but maybe I can come later, you know. So that's what I did. I went to Japan 2 weeks after I was released here, and then just a lot of crazy stuff.
Two weeks?
Yeah.
How'd you get booked that quick?
Rick Bassman in California called me. I didn't know him, mm-hmm. and I just went. It was a thing for Inoki, a place called IGF. But from there, I just reached out to anybody I could, and I went to Africa. And there's some good stories about that stuff, too. I was stranded in the Congo and Nigeria, twice in Nigeria.
How are you stranded in the Congo?
I mean, you might as well just tell that story. Yeah, that's better than your boring story. Let's talk about the Congo, boy.
Well, Nigeria is a better story. Basically, I agreed to go to Nigeria because this guy would basically show clips of WWE guys and then ask them to come because he had, like, you know, a money guy over there who would bring them in. I didn't know at the time that the money guy was in the Nigerian military, and they were basically using this professional wrestling as extortion to some other businesses and stuff like that. So I agreed to go alone the first time. And I went there and I quickly found out that it was a mistake. But I had a guy who was kind of the liaison who had worked in the WWF years and years and years ago. And when I was with him, it was okay the first two times. But what they would do is they would want me to bleed everywhere, and they would want to get film of this, you know, 60-plus-year-old Nigerian man beating me in wrestling matches in front of no people. And I had read about this practice in Mick Foley's book as a youngster, so I'm like, these are the same people.
It's a youngster.
And you're pumped. These are the same people. Too, right? I have to try this, you know? This makes perfect sense. Yeah, let's bleed together in Africa. That sounds like a great idea.
I would say. Not like it's the birthplace of AIDS or anything.
Doctors on call, of course.
So, like, second time, the liaison guy, he's having big trouble getting his money, so I, of course, become the booker. Why wouldn't I? They're like, we need more Americans, and I'm like, I can get them. So I find some fellow kindred spirits as well. I talked my buddy who used to work here, Domino Cliff Compton, to come in. And the final straw, we got over there, and basically we were supposed to have a show. Say we landed on a Tuesday. On a Thursday we're supposed to wrestle. We don't wrestle until like Monday, and we wrestle at like 2:30 in the morning. There's no one in the building. I'm outside in my daishiki, my traditional African garb I bought at the market, trying to wave people in. This big Caucasian man. Here. We've got pro wrestling, everyone. Join in, join in. We've got former WWE, you know. So
you?
Yeah, me. That would be me. So
I ain't going to that.
You know, we get in there, and this guy, like, you know, he can't wrestle at all. But we're putting on this exhibition, so... I just remember Cliff was in the ring, and he's kicking him, he's punching him, he's trying to shoot him off the ropes, and he's just standing there. And I said, punch him in the balls, you know?
In the balls.
So he dropped.
You can say balls here.
Okay. I say, punch him in the balls. So he drops to both knees, and he doesn't give the traditional China-esque upward ball shot. He gives a straight overhand right, to the sack-a-rooney. And Power Rudy still doesn't go down.
Of course not.
But he does fall out of the ring, and I mean, we're just beating on him. But across the back and chest, he comes up full face of blood. Why not? You know what I mean? So then this happens, and they say, this has been great. We've got great footage. Thank you. So we're supposed to wrestle again the next day. We don't wrestle for, like, I don't know how many more days. So it's the final day we're supposed to leave. And I'm like, thank God we're getting out of here. Sorry there weren't any more shows. The guys are like, let's just go. Why did you bring us here? And I'm like, I'm sorry.
We hate you guys.
So, yeah, we hate you. We're not your friend anymore. I was like, oh, you'll get over it maybe eventually. So the great Power Udi shows up to the hotel, and he's like, hey, we have to go to this other part of Nigeria. It's like a 3-hour flight, but only you and I are going, and we have to have a special match for the general. And I was like,
what?
But the flight's tonight, and this is like 10 a.m. And he's like, well, you have to go or you can't leave. And I was like, I can so leave, but really I can't leave. I'm like in a hotel behind a fence so that someone doesn't attack me, you know? Yeah. So I'm like, well, let me at least take – and one of my other buddies who was a long and independent guy, I said, let me take him along to be the ref because I don't want to go by myself.
Sure.
You know?
It's Nigeria.
Right.
Yeah.
So we go to the airport. We fly there, and we get off the plane, and we get escorted to this place. And, like, the hours are – I'm, like, looking at the clock now because, like, I know we have to leave tonight or we're not getting out of here until, like, the next week, they're telling us. So – the great Power Udi is in a van, and he's
Power Rooney.
Power Udi.
Power Udi. Okay.
Yeah. UTI.
So he pulls out this papal regalia like John Paul would have worn, and a huge saxophone, right? And he's putting this on, but he's taking like an hour, and I'm not kidding. Like, I didn't even have gear with me. I have on like a pair of boots, a pair of shorts, and like a cutoff. And I'm like, let's just do this. There's no fans. We're in this massive building that holds I don't know how many thousand people. There's no one but a general sitting behind like a stationary camera that was probably $80.
Wow.
I don't know what they're gonna do. Well, yeah, that's the other thing. He said, we got to get some juice for the brother. So I said, "Why? Of course we will." So I'm like, come on, you got to put on the papal regalia. Let's go. You don't need to wear that. Let's just wear the trunk. So like an hour goes by. He comes out. He plays a saxophone to the ring. He plays his own music. He does this entry. There's no one here. He's going to all four sides. And I'm like, please, God, let us do this. So we have the most abysmal professional wrestling exhibition like you've ever seen in your life. I'm just bleeding everywhere. He's bleeding everywhere. We're mixing it together, whatever.
Yeah.
You know? And then, you know, he wins, obviously. And then it's time to go. But again, now it's like a big deal. Like him and the general are glad-handing each other. He puts the papal stuff back on. Like he won't leave. It's this terrible thing. So, like, I'm losing my mind because we have to make this flight back to Lagos, get Domino from the hotel, then fly to America, or who knows what's going to happen. So finally we go to the airport, and he tells us that he's sorry, the sponsor didn't come through. We don't have tickets to get back to Lagos.
Oh, my gosh.
So he goes, I have no money. He's going through his pocket. So, like, we're fuming, Mike and I. So I pull out my credit card. I buy two tickets from, I wish I could remember the town, to Lagos, Nigeria. Well, then we get on the flight, and the SOB's in first class wearing a suit. And I was just like, you piece of
garbage.
I'm very angry with you right now. So, like, we're fuming, whatever. We fly back. I'm like, let's just get back. Let's get Cliff. Let's get the hell out of here. We get back. Well, he takes us straight to the airport. I'm like, we need our friend. I start losing my mind. Powerudi disappears. We have no way to get to Cliff. It's not like we can just summon a cab. There's guys walking around in cut-off shorts with M16s outside. So finally, Cliff comes pulling up, and he goes, they took all my money. I said, what? He goes, he didn't pay for the hotel rooms or any of the food we ate, because we had to eat inside the hotel because the food wasn't safe, you know? So we ate these really small chickens every day and drank this really weird soda, and at night we would drink Kiss Mix, which was a mixture of gin and tonic that came in a can.
Of course.
Yeah, of course. What else would we be doing? Yeah. So, I had paid Cliff in cash, and they took all his cash. They took all his money.
Wow.
So finally, like...
They just robbed him, basically?
They just took his... They said, you're not leaving here unless you pay, because he didn't pay.
Oh, for the hotel. Gotcha.
Right. So apparently Powerudi had offered a compact car for payment, but they wouldn't accept. They wanted money.
My God.
Right. So he gives him the cash, and then all of a sudden, Powerudi, like, bursts through the doors. Well, at this, I can't take it. So I grab, like, the lapels of his suit jacket. I go to jack him up against the door. Like, I've lost my cool now, which takes a long time, but I'm like, you...
Hold on.
Hey, I'm not talking about driving on the 105.
Temperamental brother's lying.
So I do this, and we get outside, and I got him jacked up, and then all of a sudden, there's just guns with bayonets in my face surrounding me. And Cliff's like... We got to get out of here. So I just do the classic, like, wrestler beg off. Like, I have a son at home. I'm going to get shot with an M16 over this.
In Nigeria.
Wow. Go inside. In Nigeria. We get away from him. Go up to the counter. And guess what? We don't have plane tickets.
No.
So, again, I have to go in this office and talk this lady at some weird airline and purchase tickets just to get us to New York. By the time we got to New York, the only communication we had this whole time now was like our Facebook accounts. We were telling our friends and family. Well, the State Department called my phone when I landed at JFK, and they were like, please don't go back to Nigeria. It's one of the most corrupt countries in the nation. We heard about what happened to you guys. We were going to send some. I was like, is this real? Like, someone. Who are you going to send? The
Rambo.
National Guard coming in?
Get Rambo in.
So it was just unbelievable. And this was the kind of thing I was up to, you know, in my late
20s.
Right. So what was your journey? I mean, not that you can follow the Nigerian terrorist story.
No, I just...
Were you working? Because I'd never heard your name. Let me just say this. It's very rare nowadays that you get guys, American guys, that are big stars in Japan that have not worked in the States.
Yeah.
Sure.
That used to be something that happened quite often back, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, but not anymore. Right.
What was cool about yesterday, Monday Night Raw yesterday, was that it was at the Staples Center, and that's where I was actually an extra for WWE in 2008.
Tell your story, please.
And I had gotten my New Japan contract to go to Japan there the very next day on Tuesday. I was an extra in 2008 at the Staples Center, and it's just cool to be able to debut in that same building, that place that I was an extra at, where they didn't care about me at all. Nobody cared about me in that whole entire building.
Right.
I got a catering story.
Come on with it.
I walked into catering, and as an extra,
so you're an extra that you're having a tryout?
I didn't have a tryout. It was the Hornswoggle and Vince McMahon were doing they're putting together their cage match. So I stood out by the ring like an idiot by myself. It just was like, I was so nervous, man, and I was just like, this just... And I just was on. I was just walking around. I didn't know what to do, you know.
Right.
And they're like, well, and then somebody goes, let's go eat catering. I was like, hey, that's fine, cool. I walk in, and like, all the superstars are in there, man, sitting around. There's everybody, all the brothers, Jeff Hardy, but Triple H, Shawn Michaels, Shane McMahon, Chris Jericho. I load up my food. I turn around. I look around, and every table's taken. Every seat's taken, at least in my eyes.
Yeah.
And I went, nope. And I threw it right in the trash can and walked the hell out. And I just gone. I don't know where I went, but I went somewhere in the Staples Center that wasn't catering.
You know, I remember thinking, look at that. Some extra over there just took all that food and threw
just
it away.
Wasting it.
No. What an asshole.
There's
I bet those people in Nigeria
no
wouldn't like that food you threw away in catering.
There's no way you remember me.
Sent it to Legos.
Was that? I did it. There's no way you remember me that day. Nobody remembered me that day. But then I went to Japan for I sent a tape to Japan. I met Shinsuke Nakamura. I met Fergal Devitt, Finn Balor, at the Los Angeles Dojo in Santa Monica in California. And so we stayed there, and I ended up sending a tape to New Japan. Gato watched it. He watched one match, and they hired me.
Wow.
Brought me in as a 3-month young boy contract, and after the first match, they gave me a year contract because they thought I did good. And I watched the match back now, and I didn't think it was that great, but they thought it was good then. And it was, I think it was fine. I think it was more than what they expected because I wasn't no name at all. I was just an independent guy. You
right.
know?
I think that's it, too. A no name guy, some good size, some good work. They can make something of you and build you as a star like they did back in the days.
And Gato had just taken over as the booker, and I was the first foreign guy that he booked. So we had like this bond that, you know, through the years grew more and more. And I stayed in New Japan for 8 years, and I was content with staying.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know,
everything. Did you have kids when you first went there?
No, I was a single brother.
Right.
I was just a maniac.
But when you get married, it changes. Because when I was going to Japan, I was a single brother, too, and I was pretty much living there. And if you don't have any worries, commitments or cares, forget it, man. Just stay there. I used to stay there for 8 weeks at a time. Yeah. 2 weeks off, I'll just stay in Japan.
No problem.
And have a blast, too, I'm sure, because you don't have that commitment back
home. The sponsors, you know, the girls that are around.
I was there for 100 days.
100 days?
I would say 3 months, me and Finn Balor would stay for, you know, Finn stayed for 5 months. 5 months one time.
5 months.
Yeah.
But in the dojo?
In the dojo, yeah.
Right.
And it got to where, like, they liked us. They realized that we were training hard. They realized we were, you know, decent workers. We were respectful. So they got Wi-Fi for us. They started cooking food for us every day. And, it ended up being like a family type thing.
Right.
And they accepted us, man. And that was the coolest thing. And I got a year contract, then another year contract, then a 2 year contract, and just kind of it's 8 years later, you know.
Yeah.
And it was time to just make this crazy thing.
How did you guys get put together as a team?
Well, he started brothering me up about
what?
He started brothering me up, started sending me text messages, but Barry and brothers. No, I didn't. We started texting back and forth out of nowhere, and
when you're back home?
He was over there, and I was working in another American company. I don't know if we talk about it, but I was working there.
Oh, you in TNA?
Yes.
Okay,
yeah.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and
it was coming up, right? Your contract
my deal was coming up, and I had asked for more money, and I had found out I was not going to get more money, and I felt like at that point, like, I had grown as a performer and I deserved it. I wanted to try to do something else, and we were just kind of texting back and forth, and then, you know, basically on that end how it happened with
he just goes, hey man, is there any chance for me to get to New Japan? And I was like, I mean, just send me a link, I'll show it to Hattori, who books all the foreign talent. And he sent me the link, I showed it to Hattori, and he goes, man, he's a good worker.
Yeah,
looks like,
man,
you
too, right.
Maybe good gimmick, you know, maybe good tag team. I looked at him, I said, I don't need a tag team, I'm doing fine.
What about my singles push, big man?
I don't need this guy to pull the rug out from under me. No. But then, like, they literally, Gato looked at it, said, like, oh, he's good. They watched one of his matches, and he's a big guy that can move.
Right.
And they were like, and Gato brought him in, we won the tag league tournament right out the gate, won the tag titles at the Tokyo Dome, and we realized that we were buddies, and we weren't friends before at all.
No.
You know, we realized we liked to, you know, have beverages together and hang out and talk about the business. And
so the chemistry was there.
We kicked it off right away.
Yeah.
You know, and
right away.
And that's, and we were together for two straight years, solid years, and it got so busy in Japan that we were there all the time. He was 35, 40 weeks for the year. Yeah. Man.
Wow.
Yeah.
He made a lot of money.
We're in the ring one night. He's on a contract, and I'm still on a per week. And, you know, we're always ribbing each other, and he looks me dead in the face, and, like, there's 10,000 people there, and our opponents are coming down the aisle, and he goes, how much do you make a week?
We hadn't talked about this
and
yet.
And I went,
you know?
Before the match starts.
Yeah, the music's playing, the lights are flashing. I go, what? And he goes, how much do you make a week? And I go, are you serious? And he goes, yeah. And then I told him, and he got hot at me.
It was like just something hit me. Because I realized, I think before we left, I go, how many weeks are you here a year? And he goes, oh, we did like 33 or something. And I went, oh, it's... I got him this job. So we start walking in. We walk in. We get in there, and I go, how much are you on a week? He goes, huh? I can still see him say, huh? And he goes, oh. Like he unwillingly told me, and it was the real number, too. And I go, you made more money than me last year.
And he wanted to punch me.
He goes, oh.
Anyway, shut up.
Because I was on like a guaranteed contract. So I was, you know, no matter how many weeks I was there, I was getting paid that monthly thing.
Right.
And I was thinking, this brother is just rolling it in.
I mean, not, whatever.
And I was like,
you know, at the end of a tag team match when the partner walks out on the other guy, it happened that night, but it wasn't supposed to.
And I wasn't mad at him at all. It was just like, what in the world? Come on.
See, but that's the thing. You guys are a tag team, so you should be on the same team.
Exactly.
Deal,
we should be.
Yeah. I've been there, you know, six more years than him. Yeah. And I was thinking all this kind of stuff. I was just looking up at him like this, of course.
Hattori thought I was handsome.
But that is a great Hattori, by the way.
Yeah, man.
Yeah, man.
I spent a lot of time with him, man. He's just took good care of me. Like, he's been booking the guys for a long time, right?
Yeah, and Hattori also lived in the States in Tampa.
Yeah.
So he's the head ref, booker, and he understands a little bit of what we're going
through.
Came up
with
through
Eddie Graham, man. I mean, you know, when Hogan started and all these guys, he was there in the very beginning. And that's why you can never blow smoke up Hattori's ass, because he just knows the deal.
You
like,
can't
he's
work him.
So many brothers have tried. Come on, man. I know that.
Yeah.
I see Eddie Guerrero one time. He's like, "Hey, Eddie, you look like Mexican flamingo, man." What do you mean? Big body, small rigs.
That's totally him. Is anything to get to get under some skin?
Like I said, Hattori, man, we're leaving after the tour. You know, you gonna miss me? No, man. A lot of brothers dying, man. I don't miss them. I don't miss you, man.
I was just like, damn, man.
All right, man. Well, I'll see you next tour. Yeah. Take care.
But you guys had good respect there when we went last year. I can't remember if you were there. We went on for dinner
didn't
after
come,
our
man.
Show. Okay, so you weren't there. But you and I had met for the first time there, Carl.
Yeah.
And I remember I was sitting next to Gato, and you went up to go to the bathroom or something. And Gato said to me, "That's my guy right there. He's one of the best in this company."
Yeah, man.
Talking about you.
Yeah. Gato was he was great to me, man. He took over, but Gato's a great worker too. Like,
still to this day, he's awesome.
Like,
just smart.
His punches and his facials, and like I think he like changed the New Japan Pro Wrestling business.
Yes,
because in 2008 they were kind of, but then like he took over booking completely, and each year it got better and better and better and better, and like to the point where the last 2 years we were barely home because they had so many shows.
Rockets were, and it was sold out.
Like, and a new sponsor or a new. Owner bought New Japan with has lots of money. It's a big, huge company in Japan called Bushiroad.
Okay, right.
So,
can you tell Chris the story about how you said Hattori decided to give Gato the booking job? Because I just think that's real interesting.
Yeah, like Gato was on the corner, but tagging with Jado, and the guy hit the ropes, and like Gato like reached for him, you know, like he was like reaching to grab like the back of his hair
or something.
He goes, "I watched him do that, man. I thought." He could get it, man. I want to put him in charge. Because Hattori had left New Japan, and he came back. And like the way Hattori explains it, he goes, "Yeah, they had guy Mark, and there was a Mark in the office, man. He don't know this business, so I sneaky snake in the office. Get him out of there, man."
But he says it all very straight. I sneaky snake in the office, get him out of there, man. Yeah. Like no laughing or smiling, straightforward.
Yeah.
Like,
get out of here, man. Then I put the Gato in, now business change, man, you know.
But the thing with Gato, because we used to team together in the 90s in WAR, Wrestle and Romance. I was the romance, of course.
Of course.
You know what I'm talking about. But he always was obsessed with Memphis wrestling.
He loves
Memphis
wrestling.
The Rock
and Roll Express.
Yes. And
loves all that.
Loves that stuff.
It might not have been in Memphis, but the Orient Express and that old style of tag team wrestling.
Eddie Gilbert, he likes all that.
Yeah, I remember one of the big spots is if we were beating up a babyface, he would take off, he used to wear like a kind of a karate gi with a belt.
Yep.
We'd take the belt off and throw the guy across the ring, and they were going to choke him with the belt. But he ducks, hits the ropes, and then jumps in the middle of the belt, so we headbutt each other.
Boom.
And just stuff like that, but in the context of Japan, where it's all rough and ready and tumble, it really worked.
Yeah, and it's so different from what they're used to seeing.
Yeah,
too.
And I think that's kind of what he brought to his booking as well.
Yeah, he changed. Like, it wasn't so much just guys in the ring just fighting. Mm-hmm. It was more like they started getting characters coming
in. It was just like when the girls came in. Like, that hasn't happened in Japan in years and years,
right?
Yeah. He liked the entertainment aspect and the stuff, you know. We just started doing these promos about Maria to pop ourselves. We were kind of doing the Santino voice, going, "Oh, Maria, that's when I love you." And I'm going, "You don't love Maria." And we're doing this in our post-match, you know what I mean?
Maria.
And this is Maria Kanellis. She was with you guys.
She was, And
she ended up getting really over, and the fans
and
loved
her. It became
her,
like a thing. I
had like this love. I was just in love with her, you know. Maria, I'm going to make love to you in front of my wife.
So the whole story was like, he wants to make love to her. I don't want him to, but like, we just made it up, and then all of a sudden it's like on
in the
TV
ring?
There.
Yeah, so in the back in the commentary. Then next thing you know, we did a big angle of it for 6 months.
Video package and all this.
You want to make love to her?
Yeah, make love to her.
What's the video package?
There's an awesome clip.
It's him like on his knees saying, "I love her so much," and then like I'm sitting in the back. Like, "Oh, I'm gonna beat you up for this," you know.
There's a clip though.
There's wind blowing through her hair, you know.
I got to show you this clip. It's really funny. It's on YouTube. We're in Ryogoku. It's sold out. There's 12,000 people there, and Maria pops up. I was going for my big finisher, and I'm firing up, and Maria pops up on the apron, and I just. And I start dancing and smiling. And then AJ runs in because we're teaming together, and he stops me, and I'm pointing at Maria. I turn AJ around, and AJ looks at her and goes, and AJ starts dancing. AJ's a championship wrestler.
He turned himself
into a famous legendary wrestler there now, just in the 2 years he was there. So when the people saw him do that, they were just like, but laughing. And then Gallows comes in and tries to stop us and
gets
Maria. But it's just watching me and AJ dance in front of 12,000 people.
It's great.
I still watch it.
That's money. Money's worth
to me,
right,
that's money.
It's entertainment. But that once again, talking about how you can integrate that stuff into the Japanese style, but people enjoy it.
And they enjoy it now, you know. So I think Gato helped all that stuff. Mm-hmm, because he gets it, man. He gets it.
Let's talk about the Bullet Club, because it was such a huge phenomenon. Yeah. And it was a big deal when, well, first Finn Balor leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then AJ comes in like the same day that Finn leaves.
Same night AJ came in.
So how was it for you guys when Finn left, first off? Because he was kind of the leader of the Bullet Club.
Yeah, he was like, you know, we came up together pretty much. And so him leaving was sad, just sad. I was glad for him because I wanted him to come to America and get a shot because I know how good he is. But just it was just we were in tears, you know, the fact that he was actually leaving.
Yeah.
But we knew that the Bullet Club would be fine. I mean, I had confidence in our abilities, and I knew even if AJ hadn't have come, I still felt like we would have been fine because we had this thing going that I was just confident in. But then I knew that getting AJ was going to help both of us because it was going to help AJ, you know, come into Japan with something cool. And then it was going to help us because AJ is, you know, one of the best in the world. So
who was in the Bullet Club? It started with Balor and you two guys?
It was me, Balor, Tama Tonga, who's the King Haku's son. You had Bad Luck Fale. He's a big New Zealander, the Tongan kid. The Young Bucks came in.
Gallows was next. Then I came in November.
And Gallows came in. Yeah. And then it ended up...
pretty big gang.
It was gang. And then Kenny Omega ended up coming in, and AJ was there, of course. And who else?
Yujiro Takahashi. A Japanese guy.
That
was
kind
of Val Venus.
He was just kind of floating along, and they put him in the Bullet Club, and he got really over, man. So,
he struck gold with this Bullet Club. T-shirt sales, and just how the over you guys were.
Because we were, like for example, Finn Balor would be wrestling Tanahashi in Osaka in front of, let's say, 7,000 people in a main event or something. And I would come running down out of nowhere from the side, slide in when the ref was turning, and I'd hit Tanahashi with a diamond cut or something and run out and just be gone. And the people were just, they hated that stuff,
It's cheating.
And then, Ferg would turn around, look around, and then hit him with his finisher, and then 1, 2, 3. And the people just, oh man, they hate it. The New Japan was getting calls at the office saying that Bullet Club has to go. But then they're buying all the shirts, you know?
Anytime we pulled the ref, it was just like the air sucked out of there because they hated the cheating.
Never seen it before.
It was like 1, 2, then pull the referee and they just,
like, I can't believe it.
Was so mad.
How could you do this?
And then even the American internet fans were saying, like, oh, these guys are just really ruining what Japanese
integrity.
Easy marks. That's the idea.
The integrity of it.
Stick with us here.
Because we were just having, man, it was so, and I think that because we were all friends, we all got along. There was no inner bickering.
We all would just hang out because we were together buddies, all the time. You know, you hear that. Like, I used to read that in the wrestling books. Like, I was married to this guy. But we were, like, we're on a small bus together all the time, putting up with each other's BS all the time, and we were all great friends, so it made it that much easier when we walked out there together, you know?
And that is the difference, too. Like, here you travel with your guys or, you know, like, by yourself or whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone stays in different hotels. But in Japan, like you said, you really are together at all times.
All the time.
Same hotel, same bus, same, you know, a bus call time, same stopping for dinner or lunch at the bus stop or the travel center. So, those are your guys.
Yeah. And then,
and then they love the Bullet Club. So at night, the sponsor wants all of us. So we are just always together. And we're always feeding off each other. And we had a lot of fun.
Then we get back to the hotel like 1 a.m. or something, and we're not all ready to go to sleep. So we have a little shop talk session in the room. Of course.
We used to do it in the lobby of the hotel.
Either way, we started getting a little more room.
We started getting in trouble in the lobby because some of us can't turn down our volume.
Wonder who that is. Like if Rocky Romero, who's he's on floor 3 or something, we're just like, hey, brother, we're home. Let's meet at the vending machine.
Let's dance, baby boy.
That's the thing. There's a vending machine with beer in it.
Exactly. Just everywhere.
Yeah, and if you're having a really good night, you empty it so there's no more beer.
Just empty. Empty.
Can I get some more yen, please? In change for the beer machine.
Let's walk to the Conveni, brother.
Conveni. Lawson Station.
Exactly.
Some of those chicken nuggets where you're not really sure what they're made of.
Like one time it was like 2 in the morning in the hotel. We just got back from a sponsor but we all loaded up on our own beers. Are we going to somebody's room? I don't know. We can go to our own room and drink them? I don't know. we're walking down the hall, and like Cody Hall's behind us, who came over, and he's just kind of walking slowly. And I'm like, where's he going? I'm thinking, where's he going? I don't know. You know. Anyway,
I have a feeling I'm about to get buried here.
Yeah. So, I go in my room. Gallows turns around and goes, "Come on in my room, Cody. I'm holding court." And Cody goes, "That's what I was figured. That's what I figured. This isn't even my floor." So like he gets off the elevator, full heartedly knowing he's going to Gallows' room to hang out.
Sit down on that bed. Let me tell you about my life.
That's how things used to be, kids, back in the old days.
It's way past the time for us to be up talking. We need to go to sleep.
But that's one good thing about Tokyo. Like, if you want to go out, like, we would always end up, you know, the typical Roppongi. But sure, you would go there, and if you wanted to have a night, man, you'd come out there with the sunshine at 8 in the morning. It's like, well, what do you want to do now?
Yeah,
we can go somewhere else.
Anywhere. There's places don't close, you know? Like, yeah. I've walked out of course in Roppongi many times with delights. Just whoa,
gas panic,
and then looking at my phone,
Lexington Queen,
and then looking at my phone and seeing my wife has blown my phone up, and I go, oh baby,
what time is it over there? Oh, I just got up to go to the gym.
The problem was that she got so. I mean, I'd been there for so long. She got smart to that. I mean, she had the Tokyo time on her Apple Watch. I mean,
she knows exactly what time it is.
It was just like, honey, I'm out. It's going to be a while. I'm sorry. And then I got to where I had. You know, she knew it.
That was something they grew to understand, though, because of course it causes problems. But sometimes, you know, they brought you and they've done all this stuff for you, and it's not cool to get up and leave. So you're going to sit there and look
stay.
At them. Like, we'd sit in an Italian restaurant till 6 a.m. just like,
so much
right.
honor and that sort of thing. That is a real thing there.
That's
in
true,
in the same country that also has, you know, magazines with girls peeing on the beach in school outfits and giant dicks attacking people in comic books. So there's the yin and yang of everything, you know?
It's like, I remember one night, like Finn Balor, he didn't like to stay as long as he would. So once he got a little more credibility, whatever, tenure, he was able just to leave. And like Nagata was like, Yuji Nagata. Looked at me and goes, "Chato?" And I was like, "No, I'll stay, dog," you know. So everybody left, and at the end of the night, it was like probably 5:30 in the morning, and Nagata goes, "Chato, you good, Japanese style."
Chato, Chad's your name?
I like, yeah, Chato. Yeah. Chato, good, Japanese style. Ah, very good. I'm like, I'm just looking at him lit, like, brother.
Japanese style is drunk. Is that what this is?
And I sat there while you guys all talked Japanese and understood nothing. Like, I wanted to go with Ferg.
I remember I got invited out to go with Tenru one night. It's both, you know, because they call you in the room after the show.
Oh, yeah.
At 2 in the morning, Tenru wants you to come downstairs and have a drink with them. So it's like, oh, this is great.
Yeah.
And there was a dark beer. You know, that really dark, I hate
like a
dark
stout
beer,
or
stout,
yeah.
But Tenru gave it to me, so I'm well going to drink it. Yeah. And I forced this thing down. And I finally finished. He goes, "Oh, you like? Have another." Nobody knows. I'm bring another one of these things. And it's like, oh, my gosh. Force it down. And then it's like I become good Japanese style. And it's just the worst beer. And I got the worst breath. And I just want to go home. But you can't.
No, of course not. Yeah.
It's the boss.
Especially,
like,
yeah.
You know?
If you're sitting in the lobby with Nagata or Tenru, and they keep getting those beers, you're just going to sit there till they're... So you might as well just own it and have fun.
Absolutely.
I like that, though. I still like, I mean, you still have it here, but it's a little different. But that respect level and that hierarchy of, like, someone wants to have a drink with me, I'm damn well going to do it.
That was such a big thing there still, even to, like, the day we left. And it was really cool because that's great bonding time. Even if you're not speaking the same language, I always thought, like, well, how cool is this? Like, Nagata's sitting right here, and he's been here kicking ass for 25 years, and he wants us here hanging out with him. It was
a true legendary
guy. You know
guy.
What I mean? Like, somebody really respected. So,
but once again, too, Yuji spent time in the States of WCW. He knows what it's like to be the stranger in a strange land, so he's trying to make it comfortable
great.
For you guys.
Yeah,
he's a good brother, man. It was beautiful country. Like, we had fun the last tour. Our last tour was awesome, too.
Oh, man.
I mean, we just threw it down every night. It was like 3 weeks of just...
It's like your farewell tour.
We knew we were leaving, so it was just like, here we go. Yeah.
How was it for you guys to finally make that decision and tell them that you were leaving? Did you have to tell Hattori or Gato?
I ended up telling Gato first. It was intense, man.
It was the day before the Tokyo Dome. We had to go in and do it.
I pulled Gato aside and was like, man, first off, I said, "Gato-san, can we talk, like, real serious, please?" And he goes, "No, man, no." Because I'm not a real serious brother.
Yeah.
So oh, really?
He goes, "No, man, don't scare me, man." And I was like, "Oh, man, like, can we just talk in a little bit, you know?" And he's like, "Tell me now." And I was like, "All right, can we go over here?" And like, all the boys are putting their matches together and stuff, you know, sort of kind of like figuring out what's going on. I was like, "Man, I got to leave. I'm really sorry, man. The contract's up soon, and I'm going to go." And he goes, "Oh, man." And he's like, it's just a real, like, sincere, like, "Oh, man."
Shit. Oh.
So I go, I'm like, yeah, man. And then I'd forgotten that I was talking for these two guys also. That I was going to.
Two guys meaning?
Gallows and AJ.
Oh, you're talking for AJ too.
He had the weight of the world on his shoulders this day, man.
I wasn't speaking for them. I was going to say also, you know, these guys want to talk to you as
At the same time.
Like, I'm standing 10 feet away, you know, because he's got to talk to him first because of the respect and, you know, all
I've
that.
I've been there so long. I go, and Gato-san, I have to leave, but also Gallows and AJ want to talk to you. And he goes, no, really? And I go, yeah, man. He goes, oh, man. And he put his head down like his, like squirts in his face like this. And Gallows walks over and starts to tell him. And then they go and find AJ. And AJ's like, yeah, I'm sorry. We have to. Like, you know,
but wouldn't they kind of expect that, though, knowing that your contracts are up?
I think they got a little bit comfortable, man, just to be honest. Like, I tried to talk contract with them, like, in December. And they just kind of, they just got comfortable.
That won't happen.
I don't, and it didn't happen. And they signed the other guys immediately.
We felt good because it helped a lot of the guys get contracts, get more money, get locked in. I mean, several.
And, like Tama, Fale, you know, Rocky, Michael Elgin, like four or five guys.
They took a big hit.
Robbie Kenny,
With all the guys leaving. So, but now they know. So.
I think it's one of those things where they probably didn't realize how much on the radar New Japan was with WWE.
Absolutely.
Because actually, you know, I was talking to Hunter about it. He's like, well, they should have signed guys to the contracts. Yeah. That's the business.
That's what I told. I wish that you guys, something could have happened, but I mean, I was happy. It was time for me.
Sure. Right. But 8 years, man.
Yeah, right. It's done.
But, from a mental capacity, you know,
we feel like we made it. The right decision.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where did Nakamura fit in? Did he tell him at the same time too?
It's
that
funny
he was
because
going?
Shinsuke, like, I remember we knew that all this kind of stuff was coming up, and so like mid December, I was like, hey, man, you put in notice yet? You know, I messaged him, and he goes, December 24th, and I'm like, why don't you tell him now, brother? Like, but that's kind of like where I think New Japan just kind of got comfortable. Mm-hmm. So they waited. Yep. They waited to have their contract talk with Shinsuke, and sign him to a 1 year deal, and do it again, 1 year, one year, and just keep on being that comfortable, you know. So I think Shinsuke walked in on the 24th, and he was like, "I'm sorry, I don't sign." And they were like,
it must have been worse for him, like for those guys talking about him. Yeah.
Well, see, so they were just getting over a week before Shinsuke putting his notice in, and then the three of us put it in a week later, and that's when we started watching the office started to scramble, man.
Yeah.
Right in front of our
eyes. It was a crazy
time. The boys were kind of like
that Tokyo Dome show because, like, you know, it's the biggest show of the year. It's the Japanese Wrestling Super Bowl plus all that's going on. So it was pretty intense.
Tough time for
My mom came to Tokyo Dome with me and to watch the show, and like we were kind of stressed because we're kind of going through trying to figure out what's going on. And like it was cool though. It was cool for to see even see us be business like having
part,
to
right?
having just to like
the
just
real. How it really works.
Yeah. It's a business.
When you guys came here or signed here, did you know when you'd have a start date, or was it just kind of hold on?
And it was hold on.
Yeah, just hold on. And it was really weird for us too because, you know, we worked in Japan like that, but then, you know, we both love to wrestle. We love the hustle and stuff. So when we weren't in Japan, we were going out and doing independence and doing Ring of Honor and doing all this stuff. So, like, I sat home for, like, 45 days for the first time ever.
It was like...
Oh man, what do I do now? Like, this is great. Like, I get to watch my son's practice and stuff. But then, like, you know, the weekend comes, and you're like, you know.
I was joking with him when I saw him last week. I said, man, I hope I still know how to punch. Phil Horkin punch.
But you guys, last week when I saw you guys, you were one of the ideas was for you to debut last week on the Raw after WrestleMania.
Yeah. It's one of the ideas, and then it didn't happen.
Were you guys going to be in the bus and all that stuff?
Yeah, we were.
The secret bus.
We were going to be in the secret bus and stuff. So yeah, that was exciting. And then you know, right after WrestleMania ended, we got a text saying, hey, it's not going down tomorrow, we're just going to bring you guys and hang out or whatever. So we were like,
because we were waiting, like, when are they going to appear? And then I just saw you guys hanging out.
Hey guys, what's going on?
Hey, what's up?
hey
brother,
suits on. know
Which is fine, which is cool. I'm actually glad we came down that weekend because then we got to meet all the boys and everybody was cool,
you know,
man.
Him coming in the first time, me coming back, you don't know how you're going to be responded to and stuff. So it was kind of like nice to break the ice and then, you know.
Well, another thing, too, is the week after or the night after WrestleMania, they debuted quite a lot of guys.
There was a lot going on. Yeah.
So last night, you guys kind of had a little more of a spotlight, and I think it worked out.
I think it helped us,
I talked with you about it in Dallas. You were saying that. You were like, man, have it be your moment. You know, this is, you know, there's a lot of stuff going on that night.
And then this guy showed up, and then this guy showed up, or last night you guys were there.
Yeah,
like, surprise.
And don't rush anything, and you know, it's going to happen if it's when it's right, it'll happen. So
let's talk a little bit, Gallows, about your time here before. Mm-hmm. There's the Festus, great gimmick, the great hairstyle you had,
oh,
too.
Oh, wonderful. Just rocking a skullet like there was no tomorrow.
Did you have a skullet before?
Oh, well, they wanted me to grow the hair in because they had, like, I guess, too many bald guys. Yeah, and so, you know, I was like, it's not going to grow. And they were like, well, grow it. And I was like, okay,
grow it.
Early 20s man, do anything to have this job.
In 21, you had no hair then.
No, dude, I started shaving my head playing football, like loving Stone Cold Steve Austin in high school. And then when I tried to start growing it back, like I was like, oh, no, what the hell
is
happening?
Oh, so you never even knew.
Yes.
So you're shaving it for no reason?
One day you had hair, and then a little later it was gone?
Yeah, like, I mean, I knew I wasn't going to have a long time with this hair, so, like, I tried to have fun with it in school. Like, I bleached it and stuff because my dad was bald, you know? And then they told me to grow it, and I was like, oh, I'm never going to get laid again.
Dude, it was great.
And I used to wear, like, beanies everywhere. I had more hats than anyone you know. Like, I had hats of every style, shape, and size. There's some funny stories out of that I can't tell here. Yeah. But yeah, so I had to rock. And I was, like, you know, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25 with a skullet. Yeah. 300-pound man.
You look like you were, like, 40.
56.
Yeah, I thought, like, this guy's, like, 40. Like, yeah, he started late.
I remember the Hawkins and Ryder were brought into Deep South Wrestling where I was in developmental, and they told me later, like, we became good buddies because we're the same age, but they said when they left after the first practice, they went, you know, that's, like, really cool at WWE. Like, that's got to be, like, an old Memphis journeyman or something. They're giving him a shot, you know? Because I had, like, a Fu Manchu and a skullet. So I'm the same age as them.
So one of the Japanese boys named Yoshihashi, who I started with in the dojo, goes, Gallows, he, before WWE? I said, yeah, he was Festus. Festus? Oh, yeah. He goes, oh, really? And so they're all just searching it, like, oh. Everybody knew Festus.
We couldn't
believe it was this.
We had a referee named Marty who was my buddy, and we had the biggest language barrier because he spoke, like, no English at all, and my Japanese was...
And of course, his name's Marty.
Abysmal. But why wouldn't he be a Marty,
of course?
He didn't look Japanese. He didn't look Japanese either, but once Marty found that, like, every day it was, like, the novelty thing. Marty's 5'1", and he would just run up and stick his cell phone as high up in the air as he could right in my face and be a Festus. Different horrific picture of Festus, like, with my belly hanging over my trunks, or
Festus.
My tongue hanging out, or my skullet blowing in the wind, and just, Festus! And then he'd run away and show all the boys. I'm like, thanks, Marty. Good to see you too, pal.
But it was the gimmick was when the bell, you were like kind of a mute.
I was in a catatonic state.
Okay.
When the bell would ring,
must kill.
I would become enraged. But then when the bell would ring again, back to sleep.
I liked it, man. I thought it was cool.
I actually did like it. It was getting over
for a little bit.
Good. Yeah. Right with Ray Gordy was mm-hmm. Jesse.
Jesse, yes.
Right.
Yeah. It was, you know, the kids liked it. And I think it was an easy way to come into this company, too, because, like, there was only so much Festus was going to do, which career-wise, you know, if it would have evolved or I could have done something else, it might have been better. But at the level I was at then, maybe that was the best thing for me. You know what I mean? Just come in and kind of learn on the fly and you kind of do the comebacks.
What was how was that gimmick pitched to you? Like, who pitched it?
Vince.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, we were in the ring at a...
You're telling you how to do it, right?
Yeah. We were in the ring, like, at SmackDown. And Jesse and I were going to be like the new Godwins, which,
oh, okay.
You know.
The new anything.
Right.
Never a good idea.
Of course. So, like, we have, like, overalls and stuff, and we're going through our match with some enhancement guys. We're going to debut on SmackDown that night. Well, the door's open, so, like, we have to stop rehearsing and come back. We're nervous. And Michael Hayes says, Vince wants you in his office. And Michael Michael has a brisk walk because he's always busy, and we're kind of lagging behind. I looked at Ray, and I went, we're effing fired before it starts.
Yes.
Ever the positive guy, you know. So, like, we walk into the office and Vince is like, you know, we have this idea and it's a little different. It's something we've never had before. And he makes the Festus face with the tongue and stuff like that.
Yeah, kind of confused.
But this is Vince McMahon.
Right.
And I'm little young Drew, like, you know, you kind of mesmerized, can't be a mark or anything, but you want it. It's intimidating. Right. So, like, then I try to make it. Then he's like, not like that, like this. And we're, like, making the Festus face back and forth at each other for a while.
So his tongue is hanging out.
Yeah. So then he's explaining to me, like, how the bell's going to ring and what's going to happen, you know. And I'm like, okay, great. Yeah, whatever you want, you know, we'll do it. And so we talk, like, 10, 15 minutes. In my mind, it might have been 4.
Yeah.
But, you know. So then he looks at Ray and he goes, and you, what's your favorite color? And Ray is mesmerized by everything that's just taken place here. And he goes, yellow. And he goes, great, get a yellow singlet, you'll be his handler. And off we went, and that was it.
Yellow?
Direction. What's your favorite
color? We walked down the hall, and I went, why did you say yellow? He said, I didn't know what to say, man. I went, damn, dude. Yellow. But I love Ray. It was awesome seeing him at the Hall of Fame.
Yeah,
he's
great,
the man.
To see him.
He's still one
dude.
Of my best
yeah.
friends, yeah.
Did you ever have any? You mentioned that you were an extra,
yeah.
Carl. Did you ever have any brushes with getting into the company?
Well, yeah, I had a couple of discussions. So must have been. I talked with I emailed back and forth with John Laurinaitis probably in 2010 mm-hmm. after I'd been in Japan for a couple of years. But it just you know never no, there was never an offer or anything like that. And then 2012, 2013, I talked with a couple of people about coming in, and they end up saying, I'm sorry, there's no interest right now. And that was it. So that's we basically had just written it off. And it wasn't that we didn't want to be here. Everybody wants.
Sure.
Well, we definitely wanted to, but I think we had gotten to a point where we were able, we were confident with what right. we were doing in Japan and what we could do with the independence, the money we were making on the independence yeah. sometimes. Mm-hmm. It might silly, it's funnily sound crazy, but we made a lot of money.
We did,
but you
yeah.
hear that, you know, especially that you guys have like this hardcore following.
Yeah,
you
man.
Look like, this, like in my mind, it's AJ, it's Finn, but you guys, like your name was the Bullet Club. Like
yeah.
you two guys, like your tag
us.
Team was the Bullet
yeah.
Club.
Yeah,
and like,
we did.
The merch was great in those places, and we had so much fun doing that because we're doing like this serious stuff in Japan. Then we would come home and do like
yeah.
a
and
minor
no,
league ballpark, yeah. and we're just selling T-shirts.
Punk
idol
spot.
Yeah, exactly,
pressure.
Man.
There's
right.
no pressure,
just
you know.
Brothering around.
I sell. I get beat up. Gallows comes in, brothers it up. We win. Yeah.
Like, fire me up, all four sides. Here we go.
We two-sweet everybody on the way to the ring. We get in. They attack us. I'm taking the heat. Gallows comes in. We hit the finish. We're done.
That's jeez, it. That's great. Go sell some merch.
We walk out.
Go brother it up.
Straight to the table.
Yeah. No, but was, I mean, but that's how it works. The same thing happened with AJ, too. When,
yeah.
when he first left TNA, they had no interest.
Right.
Then
yeah.
he goes over to Japan, makes a name for himself. There's a buzz going on, and you yeah. get on the radar, and then suddenly, boom.
Yeah, yeah that's what it was. There was a buzz. We didn't know if they were watching the buzz or hearing the buzz or thinking about the buzz, but we talked internally with each other, and we wanted it. We knew we could do well
yeah.
in WWE. We wanted to come to WWE,
yeah, sure.
but we just weren't sure that there was an avenue here.
It's amazing what Japan did for a lot of it. Like I told him in Japan, and I hate saying this publicly, but I felt like he saved my career because at the end of TNA, it was like, I don't know if there was a stink on me or what, but like the independent stuff had slowed down and I didn't know what was going to happen next. And I remember telling my dad on the phone, I was like, man, I've never thought about getting a real job before, but I'm not going to be one of these guys who like goes out laying on my back in some gym in front of 50 people for $100 or something. Like I'm going to go do this tour. And if it goes good, I'm going to pursue it. But if it doesn't, you know, I think it's time for me to, you know, use my mind a little bit. And as much as that breaks my heart, it was a real thing. And then, you know, thank God it clicked.
It's very rare, too, though, for guys.
You're welcome.
It's very rare for guys to get a second chance on the
absolutely.
Main roster in WWE.
Yes.
I mean, it happens, but it's not
no.
it's not very,
no,
very
I mean,
common.
You know, if you're a wrestling fan, you know the history of that.
Well, and that's why I think
rare.
You said stink. I think that's a good word. There's yeah. a stink of you just getting let go here in the first yeah. place. Because then you go to TNA, and God bless them, but there's a lot of guys who are in that position.
Right.
And then if you get let go from there or don't
yeah.
stop working from there...
Yeah.
What do you do?
Well, I mean, yeah what
there
else
go?
Is there? And there's no buzz, and you're just a dude, and it's,
yeah.
you know, it just becomes like, so,
and
yeah,
he,
Japan.
Yeah, he just came right in the Bullet Club, and he's a good brother. We
yeah.
had fun. He did good. He's a big guy. And the boys liked working with him because
he's
he
doesn't.
A
big guy and works light.
Yeah,
works
he works
strong.
Light, exactly. Yeah. And those guys, the stiff thing is a complete
oh,
work.
Yeah.
They're like, because the gallows, no stiff, I like.
We used to go to these independents, man, and these guys would come up to us who were just doing it, and they're like, strong style tonight? And we're like, nope.
At PWS.
Don't do that or we'll throw chairs at you.
Well, like Tenzan and Kojima, who are legends in Japan, they loved working gallows. Yeah. We just didn't hurt
we
them.
We had a lot of fun.
But you're talking about country towns with not TV, the
yeah.
match you just described where you go down two sweet
yeah.
everybody. That's a Japanese match.
Absolutely.
You go to Yamazaki, 3 hours south of
yep.
Tokyo, where there's rice paddies everywhere.
Yep.
Some of the big stuff right at the end, and then we're
yeah.
done.
And that's,
yep.
and that's
yeah.
the way it has to be for longevity.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Getting ready to start wrapping up, you also did really good with Punk.
Yeah.
This is the Straight Edge
Straight
Society.
Straight Edge Society, yeah.
Did you learn a lot from working with him?
I did, man. And there was a lot of stuff during that. It wasn't a long period. It was maybe a little over a year. But, like, you know, him being in the spot that he was in here and the people he was working with and me getting pulled in with stuff like that. Like, you know, we were in a tag together before with him and Undertaker and Edge and just all these guys. And whether I was in the match or I was seconding him, I'm standing on the floor with the best seat in the house watching how these guys do it at this level, which is the top level in the whole business. And like, you can't buy that. You can't watch that on a tape. It was an amazing like learning experience for me because I was kind of going, oh, okay, that's why they're them. You know what I mean? Right. And it was what the greatest learning experience I've ever had in the business for sure.
Punk loved you. He used to send me pictures of you eating ice cream and then puking.
Yeah, we used to. I'm always trying to manage my weight, but on Tuesday nights after SmackDown, that was cheat night. So you know, we were straight edge guys, so we didn't do anything bad. We had to gorge ourselves on food, so we would go. The first night that happened, we were up in Canada and we went to a Tim Hortons and they didn't have like a great dessert selection, but whatever they had, like he just thought it was funny to keep ordering more. I'm like, I'm going to eat all that you ordered.
Donuts. It's a donut place.
Yeah, there was ice cream. There's icing. There's all this stuff. So I'm like, this is cheat night, man. I'm shoving it in. So like by the time like, we're all laughing and stuff. And I'm like, I can't even laugh anymore. I'm like, I gotta go to the hotel, guys. Like, look, I gotta go to the hotel. It's time. So like we get up and we're walking and I feel like, you know, like you get that like that really full, like you just eat Korean barbecue all night, burp where you're like, I can't be out anymore, guys. It's over for me. And then we walk out in the parking lot and there's like a family getting out of the car, you know, and they're making their way into Tim Hortons. And all of a sudden, like I step off the curb and it just like projectile, man, like just ice cream, icing, pastries. And not a little bit. Like, this is a large man with a full cow stomach.
I have six right videos. Six videos, at least. So this isn't just a one-time thing.
Yeah, I have an issue.
I've got at least six videos of him going, in front of Japanese people walking down the
street.
Remember
we were in the Golds in Harajuku, and we're at the crossing, that huge crossing where the shopping
is? He goes, I'm going to go. I said, go where? He goes, but you know, there's Japanese people walking all around us.
Wall to wall.
He orders this 42-ounce banana protein shake for both of us, and I'm like, I can't drink this when I finish. And like, I'm like, oh man.
He starts puking. He starts puking in the bushes on this busy street of Harajuku, and this is a big man.
And Japanese people aren't used to seeing stuff like me anyway. Right. So like now I'm just
Godzilla.
see how high his blood pressure is here. His face is beat red as he's puking in the bush.
Do you ever talk to Punk at all?
Yeah, we still talk once in a while. Yeah,
that's cool, man.
Yeah.
He's happy for you, I'm sure.
Yeah, coming back here again. We haven't talked as much lately because I think he's busy with the stuff he's doing now. But you know, up to when I was working in Japan regularly and stuff, we stayed in loose contact. Yeah.
Final question: what's your favorite match that you ever had, Carl?
Man, I have to go with. It's kind of a rip now because I talk about it all the time. But I was in the G1 final 2012, man.
Wow.
Me and Okada, it was Okada's first G1 win. He's just getting this big, massive push. And, man, the people were – it was just –
And that's a huge tournament. It's
a big tournament.
Three matches to get to the final.
It's a round-robin thing where you just – whatever it is. I wrestled two in a row. I beat Tanahashi in 15 minutes. There was a 20-minute intermission. Then I worked Okada in the main event. It was like – that's when you just – you know you're a man because you got to have some cardio, man. Baby.
That's right, yeah.
And the people were just – it was unbelievable.
They bought the fact that you might win.
Bought the fact that I might possibly win. And even to the point where they would have been fine with either of us winning is what I felt like. It wasn't – Okada was even the heel. And so it was – that's got to be it, man. Yeah, for sure.
He has been saying G1 final 2012 every day since, and I'm not kidding.
Yeah. I'll probably say it tonight. I was the first undisputed champion beating Stone Cold Steve Austin and The Rock. That was 13 years ago. Get over yourself. Okay. 14 years ago.
That's a good gimmick.
How about you, Gallus?
Probably two. I think when I was 24 – I main event SmackDown against The Undertaker, and being a big guy, he was, he was a hero to me. Yeah. And being that young, it was a surreal thing. And I actually had a pretty good match with him, I think. So that
good worker,
that
man.
Was well, of course he's the man. And then I think when we won the IWGP Tag Team Titles in the Tokyo Dome the first time, because that was the first time I really felt like I myself was accomplishing something in wrestling. Like we're in the Tokyo Dome, which was bucket list, and then we won the belts. And
who'd you win them from?
Oh, we won them from
Lance and Harry.
Oh actually.
Wow!
Yeah,
we did. They were the champions. And
Harry's done really good. Well, both of them have.
Yeah. They both have. Yeah.
Talk about guys that were here that kind of were floundering a bit and go over there and become big stars.
They transformed,
reinvented
man.
Themselves.
They reinvented
for sure.
themselves and got a style that's rugged and the Japanese like it. And
they're both good.
Yeah, they are.
I gotta say,
Harry is tailor made for Japan.
Yes,
you know,
and he loves
and he's nuts
culture.
Oh yeah, he's a hard.
Great.
He's like, but he's like Galley. He's quirky and weird.
Yeah, yeah. I'm sure you guys got along.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, we watched Bastion Booger YouTube videos at 2 a.m. together. Too well.
Guys, it's great to have you in the WWE. Finally, Luke Gallows and Carl Anderson. It's going to be Chris, it's going to be an exciting time.
Awesome to be here. Thanks for having us, man.
Thanks for having us.
Let's go eat some ice cream after. Thanks to Carl Anderson, Luke Gallows, one of my favorite weird, unique, crazy guys. They attacked Roman Reigns at Monday Night Raw. Were they helping out AJ Styles? Did they do it on their own? We don't know. But like I said, the plot is thickening. And now, with this extra added element, AJ Styles could walk out of Payback as the new WWE World Champion, okay? We're going to find out. Thanks to them for being here, though. It's great to have them at WWE and great to have them on Talk is Jericho. And it's great to have you guys. And thank you for listening and for supporting all the great Talk is Jericho sponsors, including the original, the OG sponsor, Amazon. All right? I want you to go check out the Talk is Jericho Amazon links whenever you do any online shopping. Easiest way to support the show. My Amazon links are at podcastone.com. Click on the Killer Deals button, top right corner of the page, then hit Talk is Jericho. I got Amazon links for USA, Canada, and Newcastle, England, UK, right? That's where I am right now. You can use your Talk is Jericho UK links if you're going to the show tonight, WWE show in Newcastle. I am going to be in Newcastle. I'm here right now. Wednesday, Newcastle. Thursday, Brussels. Friday, Paris. Saturday, Malaga, Spain. And Sunday, returning to Talking Dead, this time to chat about Fear of the Walking Dead. Fear the Walking Dead. So I'm all over the place. And then Monday, Hartford for Raw. So I'm bad. I'm nationwide. That's five countries in 5 days. England, Belgium, France, Spain, United States, coast to coast as well. That's what I'm doing for you guys, to bring you the top, top podcasts and entertainment all across the world, baby. And you can help me continue this show by using my Amazon links. Remember, every time you buy something, Amazon kicks back a small percentage to this show to help us cover production costs. And you can buy anything you want on Amazon. And if you want to be a Jericho, Talk is Jericho Amazon warrior, post a picture of what you bought on the Twitter at Talk is Jericho. I will retweet it and follow you. Okay, that's how much I believe in what's going on here with Amazon. Once again, podcastone.com, Killer Deals button, top right corner page, hit Talk is Jericho button, and reap the rewards. And also, you'll find all the rest of my great sponsors at podcastone.com. Through the Killer Deals button, you got easy access to ddpyoga.com/Jericho and the DDP Yoga Now app. Don't forget, April 24th, Melbourne, to see the resurrection of Jake the Snake. May 1st, have a private workout with DDP in Melbourne. Go get all the ticket information is online. Books.com, B-O-U-Q-S. Use my promo code to get the specials there. DraftKings, use the promo code YDJ, play for free. TrueCar, it really works. Guitar Center, buy yourself a guitar, give the gift of music. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button at iTunes if you haven't already. That way you won't miss any of the rock and roll stories, wrestling stories, paranormal stories, comedians, porn stars, everybody in between. Great guests, great diversity. Hit the subscribe button and leave a 5-star rating and a comment. I need those comments because that will help my podcast get to number one on the iTunes chart. So help out Talk is Jericho. Help me out and tell all your friends about us. Subscribe to iTunes as well. Thanks for listening, and keep listening for the 60-second AP News headlines coming up next. All right. On Friday, we got a special, special guest. Aren't they all special? Sunday night, Game of Thrones returns to HBO, and I've got John Bradley, a.k.a. Samwell Tarly, is going to be here. That's right. Samwell is just left to become a meister. He's going to be a wizard. Best friend of Jon Snow. Is Jon Snow really dead? He couldn't tell me, but I gave him my theories. We're talking about how they made Game of Thrones, how he killed a White Walker with the glass, the deadly glass. We're talking about Paul McCartney. So much of a great conversation with John Bradley. Who's bringing a guest like this? Game of Thrones returns, and I got one of the stars of Game of Thrones right here for you on Talk is Jericho. I know Roman Reigns is going to be excited. He's a huge Game of Thrones fan. I'm excited, and I know you're going to love it. We'll see you on Friday. Stay hard, stay cool, stay wet, and yeah, boy, Odds Botkins. We'll see you on Friday. All right.
You can download new episodes of Talk is Jericho every Wednesday and Friday at PodcastOne.com. That's PodcastOne.com.
Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges... That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
It's your last chance to get great holiday savings at Guitar Center. Like a Yamaha portable keyboard, only $79. Add a month of lessons for only $99. Plus the newest and hottest guitars, drums, keys, and more. Exclusive gear you can't get anywhere else. Special financing and gift cards, the perfect present for every musician. So hurry in and find your sound at Guitar Center. Lessons available at select locations only.
Trump's victory. I'm Ed Donahue with an AP News Minute.
It's always a lot of fun when you win. If you work hard and lose, that's not acceptable.
At the White House, President Trump welcomed Republicans from the House and the Senate who passed a bill overhauling the tax code. The president says the middle class will be seeing the effects of this bill very soon.
The typical family of four earning $75,000 will see an income tax cut of more than $2,000. They're going to have $2,000, and that's, in my opinion, going to be less than the average. You're going to have a lot more than that.
The tax overhaul bill also includes a corporate tax cut.
We have companies pouring back into our country, and that means jobs, and it means really the formation of new, young, beautiful, strong companies.
Democrats have criticized the tax package as a giveaway to corporations and the rich. The tax cuts for businesses are permanent under this tax bill, but reductions for individuals and families will expire after a decade. I'm Ed Donahue.
Barbecue season is here, finally. Prairie Fresh Pork makes it unforgettable, long before the plate, the grill, the choice of cut. It starts at their farms with a commitment to quality and flavor. That's Prairie Fresh. So dig in. It's mealtime.